Okay, we're going to start here at the bottom of Yud Amud Bet. We're continuing with the sugya about being ma'aber the shana, about adding an extra month into the year. So, Tamar Banan, Eim avrim et shana ela b'mizumim la, that the ibra shana is only done ayidei by people who have been invited by the nasi the night before to come and deliberate whether they should be ma'aber the shana, to conclude whether they should. And if they are going to make the leap year, it was done by that Beis Din. But you have to have an invite. It's invite, invitation only. So Rabbi Gamliel was the Nasi, asked that to be seven people present for him in the Aliyah, the Makom, where the Beit Din used to meet the next morning, in order that they could deliberate about the leap year, about Ibar Shana. Yishkimu Matzashmona. He got there the next morning, and of course there weren't seven people there, but rather eight. So someone was not supposed to be there, someone was not invited, had joined the party. Amar, mihu shala shlo birshut, yirid. Whoever came here without permission should go back down, should leave. Amad shmola katan v'amar, anihu shaliti shlo birshut. Shmola katan gets up and says, I'm the one who entered inappropriately, I was not invited, but I decided to come anyway. I didn't come to be a part of the deliberations for the leap year. I wanted to see how it's done. I wanted to learn from the Rabbanan. Amar lo, shave b'ni, shave. Gamil says to Shmuel Katan, sit down, sit down. Riot kol shanim kulam litaber yadcha. It's clear that any year should be ra'uy, meaning that you are the most appropriate person to be up here. El amru chamim emar b'met hashanah b'zumu min la'avit. We don't do the deliberations, or we don't enact the leap year with people who have not been invited. So Shmuel Katan obviously stood up to protect the innocent individuals, or the person who was going to be embarrassed by the fact that they had entered without an invitation. As the Gemara says, "Lo Shmuel Katan Ava." It wasn't Shmuel Katan who had come up inappropriately. Ela Inish Achrina. Umachar Kisufa Udava. Then he wanted to protect that individual, so he wouldn't be embarrassed. In order to protect him, Shmuel Katan, who was clearly the most ra'uy to be up there, stood up and said, it was me who came up here inappropriately in order that no one else should be embarrassed by the situation. Kiha, diyotiv Rabbi. This is very similar to a case that happened with Rabbi. I quoted this case back in the Gemara in Baba Batra with regards to Rabbi and his son Rabbi Shimon, with Lishna Bisha, with Lashon Hara. So we quoted this Gemara about a situation in which Rabbi found himself. Kiyata Yadiv Rabbi v'kadorish. He was learned, and he was being dorish. Ve'riach reach shum. He started to smell that someone had consumed garlic, and he was basically stinking up the room. Samar misha chal shum yitzei. Whoever ate garlic and is causing me discomfort, you should leave the room. Amad Rabbi Chia v'yatza. Chia got up and left. Amdu kulam v'yatzu. So after Rabbi Chia got up, everybody else followed Rabbi Chia and left the Rabbi Shir. B'shachar matzo Rabbi Shimon b'Rabbi. So in the morning, Rabbi Shimon, the son of Rabbi, found Rabbi Chia. Malay atahu shitziar to the abo. You're the one. This is according to Rashi's reading of the Gemara. You're the one who ate the garlic and caused my father such discomfort in the shir. So I'm like, oh, lo take kazo b'shiro chas v'shalom. I would never eat garlic. I wouldn't be the one to do that. But I wanted to protect the individual who did. I wanted to make sure they wasn't embarrassed. That's the way to read it. The Marshua disagrees, and what seems to be probably the simpler reading of the Gemara is, Shachar Matzo Rabbi Shimon Rabbi the Rabbi Chia, that Rabbi Shimon, the son of Rabbi, found Rabbi Chia in the morning, and said to him, Amalei Atashu Tziar Talabo, you're the one who caused this pain to my father, meaning that you walked out and caused the whole shir to disband or dissolve. You're the one who caused that problem. Amalei Lotei Kazot B'Yisrael says, yes, and I did it rightfully, because your father should never have acted in this manner. We do not embarrass people in public. We don't make demands on people, even though it might be causing discomfort or it might be that they're not invited. We have to do it in a manner that the person can leave without being embarrassed in public, or can get themselves out of the trouble they are in without having to do it in front of everyone that's there. So therefore, I walked out in order to protect whichever individual it was that was going to be embarrassed, and therefore everybody walked out, and it wasn't an issue. So Rabbi Chiya Mehechad Gamala, how did Rabbi Chiya know that you act in such a manner? Me Rabbi Meir. He learned this maaseh, or the way to act like this, Rabbi Meir, to Tanya. Maaseh v'isha achat, shibata lebeit midrashot shel Rabbi Meir. There was this woman that came to the Beit Midrash of Rabbi Meir. Amar lo Rabbi, echad mikem kitshani bebiyah. One of you here, one of the Talmidim in the Beit Midrash, one of the individual learns in this Beit Midrash, was mekadesh me with biyah. So Amad Rabbi Meir, v'katav la get kritut. Rabbi Meir got up and wrote, right away, wrote her a get. V'natalma, and gave it to her. Amdu, kitvu kulam, v'natnula. Then everybody else in the Beis Medrash followed Rabbi Meir's lead and wrote her a get and gave it to her. So this way, he ensured that the person who did do it gave the woman a get, but he did it in such a manner that the person would not be embarrassed or have to admit to this in front of others. And therefore, he acted in such a manner that everybody else would follow his lead and not single out any individual. Because clearly, if Rabbi Meir, the Rosh Yeshiva, gave her a get, who knows? Obviously, he didn't do it. And therefore, if he gives her a get, then we all should do this just to ensure that the person who did does give her a get. Rabbi Meir Meichel Gamilo. And where does Rabbi Meir know that from? Mishmuel HaKatan. Mishmuel HaKatan, which is a story that we saw above with Shmuel HaKatan and Rabbi Gamliel with the case of being Ma'aber L'Chodesh. Shmuel HaKatan Meichel Gamilo. And where did Shmuel HaKatan learn it out from? From in Ezra, the individual called Shechenya Ben Yechiel. Tichtiv. Yan Shechenya Ben Yechiel Mibnei Ilam. Vayom El-Ezra Anachnu Ma'alnu Belukenu Benoshav Nashim Nachriot Me'amei Aretz. That we have made a grave mistake or a grave error, and we've taken foreign women, we've taken local women that are not Jewish. Nevertheless, there's still hope that we have an ability to be mitare ourselves from the this avla, this horrible thing that we've done. So where did Shechenya ben Yechiel know this? Again, we have to note that by Shechenya ben Yechiel, was clear that he did not have any nashim nachriot. He was not married to foreign women. Therefore, when he said this, anachnu ma'alnu, that we, he included himself in that statement, even though he wasn't necessarily the one who had acted in such a manner. By that, he showed that we don't want to embarrass anybody else. He included himself, even though it wasn't true about himself, to not embarrass anybody in particular, but to give the precedent or set the example by which people should act to get rid of these women that they shouldn't have been married to. And Shechenya ben Yechiel learned this out from Yoshua. The Tiv, Ayom HaShem Yoshua, Kum, Leich, Lama Zaten Ufel Apanecha, Chata Yisrael. Right, so Yeshua, after the problem or the issue that takes place with Achan taking from the Shlal in Yericho, and they lose the first battle with the Ai. So over there, Yeshua falls on his face before Hashem, and Hashem says, "Why are you falling on your face? Something was done wrong. That's the cause of this." He says, "Get up." Right, Amar Lefanav Bekadoshu. So he says, "Get up." There's someone who's chuteh. And so Amar Lefanav Ribono Shel Olam Michata. So Yeshua says, "Okay, who sinned?" So Amar Lo Vechidil Torah Ani Lecha. He says, "Vechidil Torah Ani." He says, "Wait, I'm an informant." God says, "I'm not going to tell you who did the particular chait. Leich letel gorolot. Go and throw lots." Meaning that you'll have to figure out who the problem is. I'm not going to identify or inform on this individual who did the wrong thing over here. So you see, even from a Kadosh Baruch Hu, he wasn't willing.
Who causes the lots to work out?
Right, right. It is. Right, it is cute in the end, because of course the goral is an idea that Hashem, it comes from Hashem. Right, mitchavein to who it was. But anyway, it was done in a matter where there was not a direct indication of who the individual was. And therefore we learn from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we try as much as possible not to embarrass any single individual or to point out or single out individuals when something wrong has been done. Some people say they learn it out from Moshe, Tichtiv. Ad ana me'antem says, "How long have you, meaning that you are rebellious, refuse to listen to the word of Hashem?" And over there, when he says me'antem, he uses the plural form of kulal and bichlal. He uses all of them, includes everybody in the word me'antem. And now, not everybody went out to collect the mun. Nevertheless, he says ad ana me'antem about all of them, not about the particular people who went out. In order, again, not to point out or single out the individuals who had done wrong. Both, I guess, from a perspective that we don't want to embarrass people in public, but also from the affording those people the opportunity to do tshuva, because they don't have to be embarrassed in public what they did. It gives them the opportunity to do tshuva amongst the people, not being singled out. So Tanu Rabbanan, Mishimeitu Nevi'im Achronim, once the last of the Nevi'im passed away, Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi, Nistalka, Ruach HaKodesh, Mi'Israel. That same point in time, Ruach HaKodesh left Klal Yisrael. So, Afa Pikein, nevertheless, Hashem still communicates. Hayu Mishtamshim Bevatko. They still used, or the Hashem communicated through to the Chachamim through a Batko. What exactly a Batko is, Tosfos here gives some suggestion that he says that, what is a Batko? It says, Yeshomrim, Shlo Yushomim Kol, Hayotzim in Hashemim. They didn't hear a voice from heaven. Ela Mitoch Oto Kol Yotze Kol Acher. Right, that they rather they heard an echo of that voice that comes from heaven, not the direct voice, but an echo. Right, kamo pamim shadam makeh bekoach. Person hits very hard. Veshomeh kol acher, and here's the echo. Yotzei mimenu merachok. Oto kol ayu shomim. That's what they heard. Bekach korim oto bat kol. They call it the daughter of the kol, not the kol itself, but a bat kol because it's a derivative of the original kol. It is a echo of sorts. Whatever the exact meaning is, I think it's an indication of indirect communication, Me'at Hashem. Right? Even the kol itself is less direct than nevuah, and being a bat kol will be something even more so, that it's a less direct form of communication with the chachamim. So pam achat, hayu misabim bi'aliyat beit guria b'yericho. They were gathered together in the location where the beit din met, in guria b'yericho, v'nitna... Alayem Batko min Hashemayim. All of a sudden, as Batko comes and speaks to them from the heavens, Yesh kan echad shiroi shetishra alav shchina. And the question about whether there's a girso kemosh Rabbeinu, El she'ein doro zakai l'kach. That he would have been as good or as great as Moshe Rabbeinu, except that the generation isn't worthy of that type of level of nivuah or a connection to Hashem. So nanu chachamim etenehem b'hilal azakein. They all looked over at Hillel HaZaken, knowing that the bat kol was referring to him as the individual. Ukishemet, and when he passed away, Amru Alav, they said on Hillel HaZaken, Hey Chassid, Hey Anav, what a Chassid, what an Anav, Talmido Shel Ezra, the Talmud, the direct Talmud of Ezra. Right, so that's, they when they get the Hesped, they indicated within his Hesped, the idea of the greatness of Hillel HaZaken being Chassid and Nav and a Talmid Shel Ezra, who was compared to Moshe Rabbeinu, and therefore they also gave that hint that Hillel HaZaken was Ra'oi Shetishra Alav Shechina Ki Moshe Rabbeinu. Shuv Pam Achat, Ayu Mesubim Aliyah B'Yavne. Here the Beit Din already had moved to Yavne, and they were in Aliyah in Yavne. V'na Alehem Bat Kol Min Hashamayim. Again, this voice appeared to them or came to them from Min Hashamayim. It's an individual here who is worthy of having the Shekhinah or having the level of Moshe Rabbeinu, except his generation is not worthy. They looked at Shmuel HaKatan, the same Shmuel HaKatan that we saw above, who stood up when it came to embarrassing others to take the fall so that nobody would be embarrassed. Shemait, again, when he passed away, Amru Alav, Hey Chassid, Hey Anav, what a chassid, one and anav, Talmido Shel Hillel. So again, if Hillel HaZaken was a Talmid of Ezra, was a Talmid of Moshe, Rabbi Shmuel HaKatan is referred to as the Talmid of Hillel HaZaken, who had the same voice and the same concept mentioned about himself. Av Hu Amar B'mit, Av Hu Amar B'shat Mitato, at the time of his death, he also said, I mean, it seems here to have like some sort of nevuah that came to him at the time of his death, on his deathbed. And he says, Shimon v'Yishmael l'charba. Shimon ben Gamliel and Yishmael ben Elisha will be put to death, meaning that they are the Haruge Malchut that we mentioned in the Asura Haruge Malchut, Elaz Quran of Shi, that we mentioned on Tisha B'Av, that we mentioned in Yom HaKippurim. The Kohen Gadol and Shimon Gamliel were the Nasi, and the two of them were there, and they drew lots about who should be killed first. So he says they will be the Cheriv, v'chavroi the Katala, and their friends, I mean their Chavirim, will be put to death in other mitot, which is Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Chananya ben Trajon. Chananya ben Trajon, who was burnt to death at the stake, and Rabbi Chanina, who had the rakes of Barzel over him. right, the Gemara in Brachos, the Gani Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara in Vodazara, the Gabe, Rabbi Hanani ben Tradion, Bashar Kolama, the Viza, right, and the rest of the nation will be plundered. So he's talking about the time of the Harugi Malchot, probably the Hadrianic laws, where there was difficulties, Vakan, Sagyan, Atidin, the Metel Amah, and great troubles will come among the nation, that there will be a further oppression. I mean, that even though they already had suffered the destruction of Mikdash, the Romans, things had been a little bit better. Once the Hadrian comes to power and the Hadrianic laws are instituted, they suffer greatly under that period of time, including the Bar Kokhba revolt, and so on and so forth. So that's what he was referring to. Yehuda ben Baba Bikshulamar came. According about Rabbi ben Baba, they wanted to say the same hesped about Hey Chassid, Hey Anav. Right? They wanted to say the same thing. But they ran into a little problem, which is that Yehuda ben Baba was one of the Harugi Malchus, and therefore Elish Nitrafasha, the time was not appropriate. Shein Maspidina Harugi Malchut. We don't give a hesped, we don't give eulogies over those that are killed by the government. Again, not a halachic issue, but rather a practical issue, that we don't give hesbedim, right? It would be right, sticking a finger in the eye of those that killed him. So we try to bury him with expedience, so as not to antagonize the people or the government that put him to death. All right, now back to Ibar Hashana, back to the leap year. Tanabanan, in bar bimin tashana elaim kein yirtze anasi. So it has to be done. The Nasi has to be included in the process of being Ma'abar L'Shana. So the Nasi is the final arbiter of whether there is an Ibar Shana or not. Was a time when Rabbi Gamliel traveled on behalf, on a political mission, to the rulers up in Syria, Vishalavo. And his return was delayed. They were running out of time, so they had to be Ma'abar L'Shana, because you can only do it at certain periods of the year, or up to certain periods of the year. But they did it, Amnachi, you'd say Rabbi Gamliel, on the condition that Rabbi Gamliel would accept their decision when he returned. So when Rabbi Gamliel would return and say that I acquiesce, or I may agree with this, then the Mafreya would have been within the time frame that needed to be done, and the Shana would be Mu'beret, it would be classified as a leap year. Now, the Gemara is going to give now the qualifications for what constitutes reasons to be Ma'abar L'Shana, to create a leap year. The Gemara is going to bring here two brightot, and on the following Amud, it's going to bring a third brightot. We'll have to, at the end, we'll try to put it together, why it is that they're written in separate brightot, or why these lists, each list is different. So, Tan Rabbanan, Ein Ma'abrim Et Hashana, Elim Kein, Aita Tzricha. Right, we only need, the only reason to make it into a leap year is for one of the following reasons. Bnei Adrachim, the problem that the roads are either still muddy or not yet fixed up in order for the Olei Regalim after the winter to reach Yerushalayim. Or Mipnei Gisharim, or for the same reason about the bridges, if the roadworks have not been done so that people can make it up for the Regel, then we postpone the Regel by putting it as a leap year in order to give time for the public works to be done. Ubnei Tanurei Psachim, or the possibility that they don't have sufficient ovens to cook the Korban Pesach in, because during the winter season the rain had caused them to to melt down or to not be functional, and therefore they have to give them enough time in order to have these new ovens be put into the kiln or to be heated up and to dry so that they'd be useful again. So because of that, they wait or they delay the Pesach so that the sun will be strong enough and that the ovens will be finished. Also for Jews, we have word that they're on their way to Yerushalayim, they just haven't reached Yerushalayim. In that they already left, we don't, either because Lo Yagiu, then if we do this, they won't get there for the Pesach after all that traveling. Or the other possibility is that they won't get there for the Pesach, and that will stop them in the years to come. We nichshal in the years to come, because they won't want to come. They came this year, they made all that effort, and they didn't reach it. So if we know for certain that someone's left for Yerushalayim, with ample time, of course, this isn't someone who procrastinated, yet for some reason they are delayed on the way to get there, then we ma'abar l'shana in order to allow them to reach Yerushalayim. Aval, lo mipnei ha-sheleg, not because of the snow. People travel in the snow. Snow's not going to stop people to coming up to Yerushalayim. It's interesting that today in Eretz Yisrael, snow stops everything. But over here, there wasn't going to be any problem with all the other regal because of the shelag. Because of cold. And for Jews who did not come up. Right. So the Jews who did not make their way to Yerushalayim already, then we don't wait for them. We don't postpone the Pesach in order that they can get here. If they didn't intend to come here, we're not going to move back the whole year just to ensure that they can reach us. So that's the first list that's made. Now we have a second list, and the second brayta is Ein Mavrin Et Hashana Lo Mipnei Akdim. We don't do it because of the goats, Lo Mipnei Atlaim, and not because of the sheep, Lo Mipnei Gozlot, and not because of the young birds, Shlo Pirchu, that have yet to grow up, or have yet to get older. But they can be an additional item, additional consideration. They will not be the primary consideration in making a leap year, but they can be a secondary consideration. So this hints at the reason that these brightot are separated. Over here in this second list, in the second brighta, these are only secondary considerations, not primary considerations, whereas the first list seems to be a list of primary considerations in being ma'aber the Shana. We're going to have a third list later on in the Gemara. I'm sorry?
What's the relevance of
all right, so that will come up. There's going to be a third list of items, and we're going to see that there's a requirement of at least two items to be ma'abr the shana. So if you require a minimum of two items, these items could be the second item. They cannot be the primary, but they can be the secondary. Whereas the first list that we read in the Braita is a list that can stand alone. Those reasons are singular reasons, and they are enough to be ma'abr the shana without any other consideration. So we have the first Braita be those that can be used independently, and any single one of them is sufficient to be ma'abr the shana. The second brayta that we just read are that these are secondary reasons, and then we'll find a brayta in the second half of the daf today that gives us a list of items that require a minimum of two. So they can be primary reasons, but they require a secondary reason. All right. So now it says ketzad. What is the case here? Rabbi Yonai Omer Mishum Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Modin Anachnu. Here's an example of a leap year like this that we are making known to you, l'chon de guzlaya rikichin, that the birds are still young, they're still young chicks. Bim raya da'arkin, right, or da'adakin, or is it da'adak, or da'adakin, that the sheep are still too young or too small. Vezimna da'aviva lumata, and the spring has yet to come. Shafarta milta banpai, and it's good in my eyes. I'm adding to this year 30 days. So that's the declaration of the leap year. The declaration of the leap year you see in here included three reasons. Two of them mentioned from our list here, the secondary reasons, and one from the list that we're going to see in a moment, which is Zimna Daviva, at the springtime. It's not yet the spring, it's still early in the springtime, and therefore, I mean, it's early, it's still, the spring hasn't really come yet, and therefore we are going to delay the year by adding on 30 days. So there's an example of the Nasi writing, or giving the declaration of the leap year. Meiteve, Kama Ibur Shana. How many days do you add when you have a leap year? So the Tanakhama here says Shlashim Yom, 30 days, like we saw in the letter from Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer Chodesh. Shimon Gamliel himself says a Chodesh. Now Chodesh is as opposed to Shlashim Yom. So in the context of Shlashim Yom, Chodesh means 29 days. Amar Rav Papa, Ratzu Chodesh, Ratzu Shlashim Yom. It's your choice. It's a new month. A new month can be 29 days or 30 days. You pick what you want. So the Gemara, or Rav Papa's answer over here about the machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rav Shimon Gamliel is, the Tanakhama says it has to be 30 days. Rav Shimon Gamliel comes, it means basically af chodesh, even 29 days, it's your choice. And over there, in the case that brought down by Rabbi Yonai, we see that Rav Shimon Gamliel in that instance picked 30 days. So we can see that his opinion is either 30 and 29, and the Braita is just mentioning the alternative to the Tanakhama, who's saying 30 days, he's mentioning the 29 days. Tachazi, let us see, ma ika bent kifai kadmai, between the great ones of yesteryear, lan butonai bet dry, to the humble ones of today. The Tanya, maseh bi Rabbi Gamliel, sheyoshev agav maleh behar habayit, He was sitting on his stair on Har Abayit. Vayeh Yochanan Sofer Halaz Omed Lefanav. And his scribe, Yochanan, was sitting there. Vishlosh Igrot Hatuchot Lefanav. He had three letters in front of him that he was about to send out. Munachot. Amelo Tul Igrat Echado. Take the first letter. This is what you're going to write in it. Vakatuv. Lachana Bnei Glila Ila O Lachana Bnei Glila Tata. To the, our brothers in the Galil HaElyon, and to our brothers in the Galil HaTachton. Ilam Shlomchom Yisga the Alam. Sounds like they probably have to add in the word the Alam here. Your, you know, greetings. Things should be well with you forever. Maudin Anachnu Luchon, I'm letting you know, the Zman Biura Mato. The Zman of Biur Masrot has come. Biur Masrot is done on the, right, the, after 3 years, after 6 years, meaning the fourth and seventh year of the cycle, on Erev Pesach of those years. It's come. Lafrushe Masro, right, Mimatano, the Zeta, right, and he says that its time has come to take out the Masrot from the, those olives that are in the press. It's not really literally the press here, but those when they put them together in a single pot in order that they soften so that it can be pressed or used later. So the time has come to be mafish masrot. Beer, this man beer masrot has come now. Take the second letter and write this. To our brothers in the south. Right, again, peace be with you forever. I'm making known to you, the Zman Biura Mata Lafrushe Masra Miomre Shibalaya or Shibalaya. The time has come to take off Masrot from the grains. So now, what's the difference between them? Why, by the northern people in the north, he spoke about the olives, and the people in the south, he spoke about the wheat. That has to do with the basically. That the crops are the most prominent crops in each of those areas. In the north, it was the olives, and in the south, it was the grains. So therefore, he wrote what was most relevant to each party. So, Tuli Gar Techad, then take the third letter. V'katuv, L'anachnu Bnei Galvata B'Bavel, L'chana. Say to our brothers in Bavel, the those in the Gola in Bavel, U'l'chana de Madai, and our brothers in Madai, so the little... mention of Purim as we come into it, right? And Madai, Parasu Madai. So we're here to our brothers in Madai. Lushar Kol Gavata di Israel. All the rest of the Gola. Shlomchon Yisgali Olam. Peace be with you forever. Modin Anachno Luchon, and let you want you to know. The Guzlaya Rikichin. The birds are young. Vim Raya Adakin. And the sheep are still not fully developed. Vizimna Daviva Lomato. The time of spring has yet to come. Vishafra milta banpai, and this issue is good with me. Ubanpai umpanpei chaverai, and the wishes of my brethren, my brothers, my other talmidei chachamim. Osifla tashata da yoman tlatin. Therefore, we're going to add 30 days to the year. So now the Gemara is pointing out over here that this is a massive bit, Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel being the Nasi, one of the early, right, an early Nasi. So Rabbi Gamliel, and there it says that when he came to Imam Abba the Shana, it says that it's good in my eyes and the eyes of my friends. Meaning that he did not just do it on his own. Yet, we found in the previous Daf, Rabbi Zalmud, right, that when Rabbi Yanai quotes the announcement by Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. And over there, when he said the reason that we're declaring the Ibur Shana is because it's Shafrat Milta Banpai. It's good in my eyes. And that's it. So here we have the great Rabbi Gamliel. And then when it's the great Rabbi Gamliel of yesteryear, he says about himself, he does it with enjoining other parties. And yet, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who is an anav of the new generation, we know that he had a tremendous anivut, and yet, still, when it came to writing the document, he still wrote, it was done upi me. It was done by me, and he doesn't include his chavirim when he makes the announcement. So Gemara says, are you so sure about that? Dilma batar davrua. Rabbi Gamliel was not such a straightforward character. Rabbi Gamliel was very tough. And he has a number of altercations, and because of the altercations, eventually they were ma'avir oto minisiyuto. They removed him from the nisiyut because the straw that broke the camel back was the story with Rabbi Yeshua and on Yom Kippurim, that he made him come over to him on his Yom Kippurim in order to prove or to show that Rabbi Gamliel's decision with regards to when the chodesh was nikva was all of Klai Yisrael had to follow that, and that we can't have deviations from the law. So over that incident, they deposed Rabbi Gamliel. Later on, they reinstated Rabbi Gamliel. But when they reinstated Rabbi Gamliel, it was on a system that involved Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was one who was chosen to be his replacement. But after he came back, after Rabbi Gamliel was reinstated, they made it, I think, that Rabbi Gamliel would darshan for 3 weeks, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah would get the one Shabbos. So every four Shabbos, one would belong to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So one possibility to explain what is meant by here, that Chaverai, my brethren that were joined with me. So that's Tosfos says it. It's more explicit in the Rabbeinu Chananel. V'tibu ba'day Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. He included with him Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Umshum Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah katovachi, and that's why he wrote in the letter that umshum chaverai, meaning that it wasn't just for me; it's also for my chaverai. Why? Because Gamliel was no longer the sole nasi. He wasn't the sole nasi because Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was also a vice nasi. He was like a little bit of a vice nasi or a co-nasi to Rabbi Gamliel, and therefore Gamliel had to mention him because he couldn't make the decision on his own. That's one plus way to learn it, Tosfos in the Rabbeinu Chananel. On the other hand, Rashi seems to indicate that the problem was that Bater Avrua, he became a nanav. He had lost some of the hubris that had been associated with him when he was Nasi, and that had caused him to act in such a manner. After they deposed him, he learned his lesson and he did tshuva, and therefore he was more of an anav. And because of the anavut that he gained from being removed from his position, therefore in the letter he wrote his name as well as his friends or those that had tamichem that had joined him in making the decision. So you can't prove from here a difference between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, because the incident by Rabbi Gamliel might be dictated by what had transpired beforehand to him. And that he was, either because he was no longer the sole Nasi, according to Tosfos and Rabbeinu Chananel, according to Rashi, that he had learned his lesson and done tshuva. So it's not an indication of how great the people of yesteryear were. It was unique. The circumstance was unique. All right, Tana Rabbanan, here's the third brisa that I mentioned. Al Shlosha Dvarim Mabrim Et Hashana. For three reasons, we are Ma'abir the Shana. Al Ha'aviv, because of the spring. Aperot al Ilan, because of the fruits in the tree. Al Tkufa, because of the seasons. Al Shnayim, Mehen, Ma'avrin. On two of them, we make an Ibur Shana. L'chad Mehen, Ein Ma'avrin. And if it's on one of them, we do not make an Ibur Shana. So this is the third Brisa, this is what I discussed before. Now you have three different brisa about what the qualifications for Ibur Shana are. The first brisa that we mentioned, they mentioned the roads, the bridges, and so on and so forth. That is, each one of those regions was sufficient in and of itself to be Ma'abed Shana. We have the list in the brisa in front of us right now, which requires two out of the three items in order to be a leap year. And again, we had the third brisa, which is mentioned, the second brisa mentioned in the previous Amud, which was items that you're not allowed to be Ma'abed Shana for, but they could be a sa'ad, they could be a help, a secondary reason, and that goes along with this brisa. This brisa says that you need two reasons if you have one of the reasons from this brisa, as well as a secondary reason or second reason from the brisa that we mentioned before about the birds being too young or the animals not being old enough, then if you put those two together, that's enough to be Ma'aber the Shana. Now, what exactly Aviv is versus Tkufa, we're going to see in a second. Here, Ubzman Aviv, Echad Mehem, if one of the reasons that they're Ma'aber the Shana is Aviv, Akos Mechim, everybody's happy. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Af Ala Tkufa, he says, on the tkufa. So what does it mean, on the tkufa? Ibailu ala tkufa smechim. If they ma'abed Hashanah because of the tkufa, then they're happy. Oh, ala tkufa ma'abrim, teku. Or a period. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is going to disagree and say that tkufa is different than the others. That tkufa by itself is sufficient to cause an Ibur Shana. You don't need to have it enjoined with any other item in order to make it a Ibur Shana. So Rashi, in describing what Aviv is, it says, Al Aviv, imlo nitpashla atvua, that the grains have not reached the state of ripeness. So he says, and there's some people who want to explain the reason that you have to do that is to wait for the Omer, because you have to bring the Omer, and you need the wheat or the grain to grow enough that you can bring it from the Omer. And Rashi rejects this pshat, and I'll explain to you what. I'm sorry? Right, it has to be chadash, right? Rashi rejects this explanation. I'll show you in the Gemara later on why Rashi rejects this explanation. A perot to ilan, he talks about the fact that they were, again, delaying becoming ripe. Because what does that cause a problem for? That causes a problem for Atzeret for Shavuot. Because the Bikurim are brought on Shavuot, so we want the fruits to be ripe enough where they'll pick them and bring them on Shavuot. What we don't want to do is inconvenience the people where they'll come up Aliyah the Regel, they won't be able to bring the Bikurim, and they'll have to return again to Yerushalayim with the Bikurim. Not only because we don't want to be Metarech them, but the likelihood that they won't come again. Right, that people make the trip, they're going to make the trip once. So they're going to come up for Atzeret. We already want the Bikurim to be in Nidbashel so they can bring the Bikurim along with their Aliyah L'Regel for Shavuot. And Al Tkufa, Rashi says, that's Ben Al Tkufa Tammuz, Ben Al Tkufa Tishrei. It doesn't matter. It's both for the springtime, or Tkufa Tevet, both for the springtime as well as the fall time, we need to have the Tkufa match up. So the Tkufa comes out now. In Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Shim Gamliel, when he says al tkufa, so Rashi says, wait, when the Aviv is one of them, we say great. Why? Because if the grains are late in developing, then when they postpone the year and they push out Pesach, then everybody's fine with that because there's no chadash. Nobody's harvested any grain. They haven't harvested any grain yet. They're not waiting for the Omer in order to be matir chadash because the chadash is not ready yet. The wheat's not ready yet. On the other hand, if Aviv is not one of the reasons, the grain's already ready, and they're gonna go ahead and be ma'abar the shana, then people have to wait an additional month before they can eat the chadash. So that was it's a big issue about postponing for the chadash, and people would not be happy about that. Along comes, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says about the tkufa. What's unique about the tkufa? So Rashi claims that the tkufa is a deoraisa. Because, by tkufa by itself, because it's min haTorah, which is a requirement that the Pesach be b'aviv, right, that the certain holidays be in certain seasons, and since the itim, the times go after tkufa tachama, go after the seasons, I mean it's clear that the solar calendar dictates when the seasons are and not the lunar calendar, therefore if we are running a lunar calendar of when the holidays are, we need to adjust to ensure that they match up with the solar calendar. Based on that, it's that kufa, or that demand that Pesach be in the Aviv, is a demand d'oraisa. And that's why it would be sufficient in of itself. That's what Rashi claims. Tosfos disagrees. He says that Aviv is nami d'oraisa. If you want to claim kufa is d'oraisa, then Aviv, the word Aviv, is the requirement by Pesach. So if you don't have Aviv, then how could you have the Pesach? So he says they're both d'oraisa. But then he says, no, that doesn't say that. I think the reasoning behind kufa is because you can't make a mistake in kufa. By Perot Ilan and Aviv, which are somewhat subjective, you have to go out and look at the grains or people's fields and see what they're up to. So there is somewhat of a subjective input in terms of when the fruits have reached their state of ripening, or how much more time do they need, how many fields are not ripe, how many fields are ripe. So those are items that can have mistakes made about them. They're decisions that involve some subjectivity. Other than tkufa, which is the calculation of the seasons, that's an objective standard. Seasons come, right, they're calculable. You know exactly how long they are. We know the solar year is 365 and a quarter days. So you know how to calculate the seasons. Based on that, it's a reason that doesn't have mistakes that can be made about it. Since it's such an objective reason, that in and of itself will be sufficient to be ma'abar the shana because of the objectivity of the reason. And now, Tana Rabbanan, Ashlosha Aratzot Marbimet Tashana. When we go to test out where they need an Iber Shana, we look at three distinct areas. We look at Yehuda, at the center south of the country, Ve'er Yarden, the eastern bank of the Yarden, Ve'er Galil, and the north. And just a note here that Rashi makes the point on Shlosha Aratzot, he says that Shloshtam Me'eretz Yisrael Hem. All three of them are part of Eretz Yisrael. That means that Rashi is saying that Yehuda, Ever Yarden, and the Galil are part of Eretz Yisrael. Now, fine with the Yehuda and Galil. Ever Yarden is very interesting that Rashi calls them as part of Eretz Yisrael, especially since this is probably discussing a time in the second Bayit, when who knows who's in Ever Yarden. I don't know if Ever Yarden refers to Bavel and the Galut Bavel, which is also part of Ever Yarden. Or Eivar Yarden literally means Eivar Yarden that is close by, but either way, Rashi is claiming that they're part of Eretz Yisrael, which is a very interesting statement.
It's less likely that they're
identifying
Bavel as perverts.
Right, so I say it's less, from that perspective, less likely, or maybe that's what Eivar Yarden meant over here. But Rashi makes the claim here that they all belong to Eretz Yisrael. If two of them require an Ibur Shana, I mean, if we look through the reasons that we have for being Ibur Shana, if they are a parent, or they are significant, relevant in two of the locations, then we're Ma'abar the Shana, but not for one location. If Yehuda is one of the areas where it's relevant, then we're happy. Because the Omer comes from Yehuda. Meaning that, in general, the mitzvah lechatchila is to bring the Omer from Karov to the Beit HaMikdash, because there's a requirement that it be Rach and Carmel, that it be fresh, right? It has to be brought straight from the fields. So therefore, there is a preference given to the grains that are in Yehuda. So therefore, if the reason that we delayed the year is because of Yehuda, or the relevancy of Yehuda, then it makes it good. Why? Because the delay includes Yehuda, and the reason to delay is to allow the grains to grow. So since Yehuda is at the point where their grains are not fully ripened, and if we postpone it, they'll be harvested around the time of the Omer, that'll be great. Because then we'll bring it from Yehuda. The problem is, the reason that we Ma'abar Shana is because of the Galil and because of Eivar Yerdain, then it means that Yehuda's crops are already ready. And if you wait an additional month, what's going to happen to the crops in Yehuda? They will dry out. And therefore you can't bring the Omer from that which is in Yehuda. Now, b'diavad, you're allowed to bring it from Eivar Yerdain or from the Galil. But we prefer to do the mitzvah lechatchila, therefore everybody was happy when Yehuda was also relevant in the reasons that they are Ma'abar the Shana. From here, Rashi proves that the reason given before that Aviv is one of the reasons for Ma'abar the Shana cannot be referring to the Omer. Rashi's assumption is that if Aviv is the consideration, and in Yehuda the grains are already ready, then if it's all about the Omer, they shouldn't have been Ma'abar the Shana. They shouldn't have considered the Eivar Yerdain and the Galil. The fact that they consider the Eivar Yerdain and the Galil in the decision about being Ma'abar the Shana proves to you that it's not all about the Omer. Simply about the Omer, then you're done already, because Yehuda has their grains ready, and then let it go. Let's go. The fact that we do not worry about Yehuda alone, and we worry about these other areas, shows you that it's not about the Omer.
It is. I mean, either way, it means the right way of the grain.
Right.
It's just whether that is because of the Omer,
solely because of the Omer, or a broader consideration about all grains in general. And that's what Rashi is saying. Rashi is saying it's a broader consideration, not just about the Omer. Alright, Tanu Rabbanan, in Rabbim et Hashanim, Ela B'Yehuda. It's going to be Ma'abar the Shana in Yehuda itself. In Vimrua B'Galil, Mi'uberet. If it's done in the Galil, okay, B'Di'evit, it's okay. So we have to, the seat of the Beis Din that is Ma'abar the Shana should be in the in Yehuda, or should be seated in Yehuda. We saw that before in the Braitot that were brought before, the stories that were brought before about the Ibur Shana. We said that they were found in places like Yavna, Yericho, right? These types of places where the Beis Din sat on a consistent basis. That's where they should be Ma'abar the Shana, and that was in Yehuda. How do I know that? He argues no, that it was done in the Galil, but the Evid, it doesn't work. What's the reasoning that he says that if you do it outside of Yehuda, it's no good? The pasuk says that you'll come to be doresh the Shechina of Hashem, and you have to come there. Kol drisha shata doresh lo yu elo b'shichno shel makom. Any drisha that you make, any deliberation or consideration or search seeking of halakha or conclusions should be done in the place where the Shekhinah is present. I mean that the Beis Din has to be near the presence of the Shekhinah, and the presence of the Shekhinah is obviously in Yerushalayim, in the area of Yehuda. Tan Rabbanan, im rabbi ha-shana b'yom. You only have to be ma'abar ha-shana during the daytime. If you make the leap year, if you declare the leap year at night, it's not any good. You're not allowed to be mekadesh the chodesh during the day. If you mekadesh it at night, it's not mekudash, because there's no such aim based in mekadesh the chodesh balayla. You don't adjudicate, you don't have, based in doesn't make any decisions at the night time. Therefore, the chodesh is not mekadesh by night time. And for that reason, if someone forgets to say yale v'yavo at night in shmonesh meina maura, we don't force him to go back, because the Kiddush HaChodesh only takes place by Yom, during the daytime, not at nighttime. Yesterday we mentioned the Machlokas about when it's a two-day Rosh Chodesh, what's the status of the second night, which the Mishnah Berurah Halacha has brought down as a Safek. Right. Is it whether it's dependent on Beis Din Shel Malo, or is it just Kidshe Mi'atzmo, meaning that by definition the day becomes Kodesh? So Amar Abba, Rabbi Abba, Mikra, what's the pasuk that tells us that? Tiku b'chodesh shofar b'kese l'yom chagenu. Right, you should blow the shofar, right, on the kese, the day that's covered, the yom chagenu. What is the only holiday in which the moon is not, does not appear? There's no other holiday that falls out on Rosh Chodesh itself, and therefore the holiday in which the moon is covered is, must be the chag, must be of Rosh Hashanah, uchtiv. And the pasuk continues, k'chok l'Yisrael hu, mishpat l'lokei Yaakov. Right, so the chok l'Yisrael, what's the chok that we're discussing over here? The chok of Israel is that we do on that chag, meaning that is Kiddush HaChodesh. The chok that we always do is Mekadosh HaChodesh. That chag is dependent on Kiddush HaChodesh immediately, meaning that it is the Kiddush HaChodesh, Rosh Hashanah. And that chok is Mishpat L'Elokei Yaakov. What is Mishpat L'Elokei Yaakov? Ma Mishpat Bayom, Av Kiddush HaChodesh Bayom. Just like Mishpat is done during the day, so too Kiddush HaChodesh is done during the day. Just point out that the Tosus here, the last Tosus here, discusses there were numerous instances where we see that they were Ma'abar the Shana outside of Eretz Yisrael. So how can you make a statement that you have to do the Ibar Shana both in Yehuda according to one opinion, or even in Yehuda and Galil according to the other opinion? How were they doing the Ibar Shana at other places? So the Tosus gives two qualifications. Right, the Tosus doesn't mention that here. The Gemara doesn't mention it. It doesn't, but Tosus mentions places like Asya and Esfamya, which are very distant places. Tosus says that one answer that he gives is that Shaloyach Hiniach Kamotu Eretz Yisrael, someone who came from Eretz Yisrael but didn't leave anybody behind who was qualified enough to do it, and therefore they can do it in the foreign country. Later on, Tosus adjusts that and says that the deliberations can be done outside of Eretz Yisrael by someone, right, who's qualified, and the declaration be done in Eretz Yisrael. Now, if the person, Shalaniach Kamot, if a person goes out and there's no one else left as good at him, if he does the deliberations out of Eretz Yisrael, then the people in Eretz Yisrael can be so mechanim, maybe Mekadosh the Chodesh of the Shana, meaning Mimaber the Shana. On the other hand, if the person who left is not on that stature, if the deliberations are done, then they come back to Eretz Yisrael, they will deliberate again about it, and be Mekadesh the Shana, or be Ma'abar the Shana, inside of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, we'll stop over here.